Hello, and welcome back to the Road Trip Playlist Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Darrow. This week's guest is Stu Larson. Stu plays a bigger role in this podcast than any of you know, but also more than Stu knows. I've been writing about music for 3 years now, almost 4 years, as I found out during this interview. But Stu is the first article that I ever wrote about. Stu is also part of the first Road Trip Playlist that I ever made. I first found his song 13 Sad Farewells, fell in love with it immediately, then fell in love with his music, and so it's really fun to be able to have him on this episode of the podcast, tell him a little bit about how he's played a role in me writing about music and now interviewing musicians. And so he's one, this is an episode where I'm checking someone off the dream interview list for me. And that's very exciting, and I'm glad that I get to share that with him. I'm glad that I get to share that with all of you. I really love this episode of the podcast, and I hope you do too. A little bit more information about Stu Larson. Stu has been making music for the last 15 years now. He's also been around that time as he left home to start pursuing music. He hasn't had a home base in the last 15 years and has been traveling from place to place. And if you look at his Instagram, it's one of the most beautiful kind of diaries of someone's travels in different places of the world, in all countries and continents. And it's a very fun thing to see. But Stu is someone who focuses on people. His making music for him has been a way to connect with people. And I really enjoy that anecdote that he shares and thoughts with that and what the overall mission of his music is. So please go check out on your Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, wherever you listen to music, go check out Stu Larson's music. Stay tuned for his new single, Part-Time Lover. And it's really great. If you love travel, if you love music, Stu Larson is someone that you're going to love. And I hope that you enjoy this conversation. Stay tuned after a brief word from our sponsor.
How are you?
Stu, I'm doing well. It's really good to be with you. I hope it's okay. I normally don't talk this podcast. The rest of this episode will be about you, but I feel like it's important for me to tell you a story. There's this story I've wanted to tell you. I also think it's important for the listeners of this podcast here, because I don't talk about myself a lot. And so it kind of, you don't realize this, but you play a bigger part in me having a podcast and having a platform to talk about music than you realize. And so I'm going to go way back. This starts back where it was like right after high school, like a college first summer of after the first semester of college. And I hadn't really done much. I haven't traveled as much as I had wanted to. I was just kind of in Utah, just staying in Utah in my small town that I grew up in. And me and my friends planned this big road trip to go up from Utah through Montana to Canada. And so I didn't really know, like my mom didn't listen to, we stuck to the same three artists all growing up in the car. And so I didn't know what I liked musically, but I wanted to impress my friends by putting together this great road trip playlist. And so I just went deep and for hours was scrolling Spotify, trying to find music. And I found 13 Sad Farewells, and that came on the playlist. And this whole thing of putting together this playlist is when I, for the first time, was like, wait, I'm finding music that I really love rather than like songs that get stuck on my head in the radio or however I was used to like finding music. So this was like, I found this, this is me. And I can remember like making a video, like at our Airbnb on this private lake house in Montana. And it's this beautiful view and the sun setting and your song was playing in the background and I had to take a video panning. And so I'm like, you don't realize it there, but it's like, so this is where I first started to love music. And then you fast forward a year later, I went back to school. I made this rule to go on a road trip after that trip, to go on a road trip once a month. No matter what, I needed to travel somewhere once a month while I was in school. And I was working full time. I was doing both of these and it was a lot to juggle. And so I'm like, I'm going to force myself to travel. And so of course, every trip I would go on, I would make a playlist. Much of your music made it onto that playlist every time, every month. And so, but my love for music grew to where I was finally like, I need to get out of Utah. I need to try something. Like similar to interviews where I've heard you talk of like, I'm like, I need to get out of where I'm comfortable and have a little bit of uncomfort or discomfort. Yeah. And so I told myself, why don't you move to New York for the summer? Like, give yourself 3 weeks to find something to do worthwhile that will keep you in the city and see what you can do for yourself. And so I ended up fast forward. I applied for every job under the sun. And one of the things that I got with no writing experience was a chance to write about music. I had no portfolio to show and I felt very nervous and like an imposter. So it took me a few months to actually do it. But here I was in this new huge city. I had met a few friends, but I was still feeling very lonely. But the first show that I ever attended and wrote a review on was you and Nat Suki at Mercury Lounge. And it was such a special night. I did put it into words, but now I can't put it back into as eloquent words as I did. But it was such a night where you and Nat Suki's friendship was so special. The music that you've created was so special. But also I remember writing about how everyone in the room you felt like you could be friends with after that show. Like there was this closeness in the air that it's like, I'm alone in this city, but that was one of the nights where I was like, I'm not alone. Like it didn't feel lonely anymore. And it was this beautiful thing. And then you shared it. And so I was like, I don't know if anyone's going to read this. You shared it. And all of a sudden 2 weeks later, I'm like just checking the stats. And I'm like, holy crap, my first article got like 198 shares. And I'm like, how did this happen? Wow. I didn't even know like what's going on here. And so I was like, wait, I was still felt like an imposter, but I'm like, this is pretty cool. And so I've stuck with it. And now it's been almost four years. And now I'm getting the chance to interview you. So it was a very long-winded story, but I have to thank you and want the listeners to know, like all of you that listen to this podcast, Stu Larson has such a special, story in it, and also kind of the themes of travel and community and friendship that I think come from that and connection that you can feel. I just want to thank you for that.
Man, that's powerful. That's really cool. It's 4 years ago. 2018 it was, right?
Yeah, I'm choosing 3.5 because 4 sounds too long. Until August, it's 4.
Okay. Man, that was a special night, a special tour. That whole year I spent with Natsuki pretty much. And that feeling, it happened every night. Yeah, the crowd, I think most of the people in the crowd most nights felt this similar thing. It was such a beautiful, Natsuki, I think, brings this energy. And when we are together, something really special happens. I think when we first met, he didn't speak any English. I don't speak any Japanese. So music was the thing that we had to connect with. And we got very close just through music. And I think our friendship was so strong that it was so strong before we could communicate with words. I think that really shows on the stage. And I think the crowd comes with us on that feeling and that journey. It's such a cool thing. I feel very lucky to know Natsuki and have that feeling as well.
Well, it was a journey, and it was like you guys also did things to help it feel even more. Like I remember one song where you took the harmonica and Natsuki was singing. There were special things, and then you, Natsuki, and Tim came into the crowd and played a song in the crowd. Right. And there were so many special things that it was like, wow, there was something just really magnificent about that. And I just appreciate it so much because it's weird to say, and it sounds cheesy to say, but it kind of did change my life. I don't know if I went to just a random show where I wasn't as invested in the artist. And it wasn't as special as that was, that I felt like I could write with no confidence in my writing, but it was like, this night was so easy to write about. And cool. So then it did more. So it sounds weird, but I want to thank you for that because it's totally opened up. I had a secret dream my whole life to interview people, and I never wanted to say it because I never wanted to fail. and all of a sudden it happened. And so, you're a big part of this, and
that's beautiful. Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. I also think it's cool because I only gave myself 3 weeks. You gave yourself 2 years as I've listened to interviews with you where, you had a good job. You were working at a bank. And I loved listening to you saying, I felt a little too comfortable, the same feeling that I kind of expressed. Mm. And you wanted to, like, you had been playing shows and you wanted to see what you could do with music and have a little bit of discomfort as well. Can you tell me a little bit about that time for you and how you kind of got to this music and way of life?
I think I was very lucky that I had music, because I think if I had that feeling and didn't have music or didn't have some way to make money along the journey, I don't think I would have left my job. I don't know, because I wouldn't have had anything to try and step into it. Yeah. So those two things combined, I think I was very lucky that I did have that feeling and I did have music that I could try and make some money to get to the next place with. And it was an easy decision because it felt so right, but it was also the scariest thing that I think I ever committed to. Like that first day when I left the place I'd been living and I had given away most of my things and put the rest in my little car. And when I drove away for the last time, I was like, what am I doing? This is crazy. What am I doing? All the voices of everyone saying this, what are you doing? Why are you giving away your things? Why are you quitting your job? Why are you going to try and survive when you could just stay here and do this? And all of those voices came back and it was scary. Yeah. But giving myself 2 years to struggle, to have no money, to suffer whatever consequences come my way, was maybe an extreme length of time, but I knew for me that after 1 month or after 6 months, I would probably want to go back to the town I was living in. And so I knew I had to force myself through a really uncomfortable period of time. And the beautiful thing is that when you go through that, you find comfort in places you would never find comfort before. You find a routine where there is no routine. Like you change, and it's a beautiful process. Yeah,
absolutely. And so when was it? So you say you didn't want to, like, you knew it was 6 months, a year is too short. When was it that you started to be like, okay, like maybe like this was worth it and this is like going to work out?
I probably honestly didn't think that until after 5 or 6 years had passed. I knew that I could survive after 6 months or 12 months. I knew that I could survive, but I don't think I really believed, I don't think I really understood how amazing it was until, that was 2007 when I quit. And it was probably 2015, 16 when I was like, okay, this is life now. So an amazing journey over those years and no regrets, but it probably really only made sense in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. It's incredible. And I want to make sure that some of the listeners that aren't kind of as aware and as familiar with you as I am know, it's when you left to work on music, that's been kind of the last time you've had a home base for the last 10, 15 years or so. You've been living on the road. And as a traveler, like I told you, in that time, I created a secret Instagram account where I was posting travel photos. Mm. I was doing as much as I could to be part of this community of people that loved traveling and experiencing something new and getting to know people along the way. But I wondered how you get asked so many times. So I don't want to ask the same travel questions that you get asked in every interview, but I wondered how you would describe what the last 10 to 15 years of your life being on the road and not having a home kind of base. You make home, but not having kind of the home base to always return to.
It's actually... Yeah, it is a question that I get asked all the time, but the answer is different now, I think, because I've had the last 5 months, since COVID started, I've been in a few different places for a few months at a time, but for the last 5 months, I've made myself a home. I bought some furniture and some things in this apartment.
Wow.
In Italy. So it's the first time I lived in a place in 2009 for a little while. But since 2009, it's the first time I've had a home that I've been, properly living in and making it a home. And so now now I've experienced this. I'm literally packing up this week to leave next week. And it feels strange. I was so used to traveling for 10 years or 12 years. And now this is my life. So I'm going to have to transition back to that way for a while. And it's Yeah, it's not easy, but that's really taught me that when I don't have a home and I don't have a place to go back to or things to go back to, it's so easy because you there's nothing pulling you back. You're just going next place. You have a suitcase, a guitar, a laptop. There's nothing dragging you in any direction. It's always forward, and it's easy because there's no attachment to a place or a person. It's just, yeah, next thing, next thing. But now I've experienced this, I'm like, I like this. And it's going to be hard to lose that attachment again.
Totally.
Yeah, it's really interesting. These last 5 months of really loving having my own place and cooking and waking up in the same place, having a coffee in the sun outside in my little spot every day. It's been a real learning experience. Yeah.
It's incredible. So what has you leaving that?
I'm going to start touring again next month. In April, and I decided not to go from this on the 6th of April to the first show on the 7th of April because I would freak out. I'm so comfortable here. I need a little adventure between now and then. So I'll have three weeks or so just traveling around in the van before I start the tour and trying to get back into that rhythm before the tour starts.
Incredible. So I've always wondered, I see the van in photos. Are you living in the van when typically before like the last 5 or 6 months or so? Are you typically living in the van? Are you just finding new cities and towns to live in? What's kind of been the process? And how do you make home where kind of you're visiting or staying for the little bits?
The van is a new thing. I bought it almost 12 months ago. So I lived in it. I traveled around in it for the summer last year, and then it got a little cold. It's a very old van, not designed for the cold weather, so that's why I'm in this apartment for 5 months now. Otherwise I would have stayed in the van, I think, but yeah, I think before that it's just been a matter of not, there hasn't been many gaps where I've needed to find somewhere to be. It's been touring pretty constantly since 2011, I guess. Yeah, 2010. But in those times, I'll find a really cool spot in a in-between place, or I go to the next place earlier or something. And I often get asked for Airbnb recommendations in different countries. And I've got a list that I found some really cool little cheap apartments in different places. And I make a little home for a few weeks and then move on again. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so what do you do much like interacting with locals? What's kind of life like for you when you're in the few weeks that you're in each space?
Pre-COVID, I always tried to just be present wherever I was with whoever was around. Yeah. And try and feel like a local. Like I never really feel like a tourist. I know that I am in places that I'm visiting, but I treat myself as if I'm a local. So I want to just blend in as much as I can and see the local life and observe and copy, I guess, in that sense, just trying to be a part of that community for those weeks.
That's how I've always get the impression. Cause like I said, I live through your photos and I love kind of the travel lifestyle. And so I'm like, but it never feels like you're in a tourist. It never feels like you're in super touristy spots. I think that probably depends, but yeah, so it's interesting to watch on the outside. And I encourage all listeners, check out Stu Larson's Instagram page. Some of the most incredible photos that I've ever seen. They're just stunning and breathtaking. And I listened to you talk about it, and you're like, I have no technical, I'm not technical in music, and I'm not technical in photography, but you fool me, because in both, it's really incredible and beautiful things.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's the, and I love that because I really don't know what I'm doing, but I feel something with music and with photography, and I can change enough settings on a camera or on a laptop or whatever to try and get the feeling that I want or to get the result that I want, but I don't know the technical process. Yeah. which I love. I love that it's a mystery for me. I think when I started to learn music, my mother and a few other people in the town said, you should have singing lessons. You should learn to sing properly. And I started, and then I was like, I don't like this. I like the mystery of just feeling it.
Yeah.
And so photography is like that for me as well. And, It's for me, there's a real beauty in that, seeing something and just capturing that moment and then sharing that, but not knowing why it works or why it doesn't work, just knowing that it does work when it does. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's it like that music has opened up this incredible world to you? You have seen the world, you've seen some of these places and countries that no one will really ever see, or no one really has on their, some of them I imagine aren't on people's bucket lists to go to, but you go and there's beauty there and you're finding that. What's it like that, like, what would the banker you think when, like, would you ever think any of this was possible, that music could take you everywhere that it's taken you, from this small Bowenville in Australia?
If I rewind to my teenage years and early 20s, this was not ever going to happen. I was going to stay in my little town and I might see some of Australia, maybe New Zealand, but I never dreamt of this. Even when I started to play music, obviously when you start to play music, you look at the rock stars and you think, that's like amazing, I would want to do that. But I don't think I even understood what that really was. You know, it wasn't like I started to learn the guitar and think I could travel the world and play music. It was just I wanted to play the guitar. So when it got to a point where I started to think, okay, I don't want to work in a bank, I want to travel, and I have to maybe use music to be my ticket to travel. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And yeah, I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the world to have this life and to have, it's been hard work and no money sometimes and all of those things, but that's, it's made it so beautiful. Yeah. I know how lucky I am to have this combination of events in my life. And it's allowed me to see, I think 50 something countries now that I would never have seen otherwise, just never would have seen. Yeah. I'm so lucky.
It's incredible. And not only we mentioned Natsuki and the incredible friendship that you have and being music taking you to these beautiful countries, but it's also helped you establish these beautiful friendships. On the outside looking in, I'm like, Stu Larson is someone you want to be friends with because you have these special friendships and people that you're close to. I've seen you with Tim and you with Natsuki, and then there's Passenger, and you have these incredible friendships that you made. What have those meant to you, that music has also brought those close friendships? And I'm sure even more, as you've been doing this and part on this journey.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. I think when I first started traveling, when I was a kid, I was very shy. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I wouldn't answer the phone. If someone knocked on the door, I'd disappear into my bedroom. Like, I was so shy. And when I started to travel, I quickly realized that I either travel and I'm very lonely because I can't talk to anyone, or I somehow get the courage to have conversations with strangers wherever I go. And that has allowed me to form incredible friendships with people all around the world. And it's just been a natural thing over the last 10, 15 years. But I think in the last 2 years during the pandemic, I've really realized how special it is, like stopping and stepping back and seeing my life and seeing the past and thinking about the future and really realizing that I've got incredible friends all around the world, and wherever I am, I'm never stuck. I really needed a lot of help in the last 2 years while I've been trying to stay in Europe and crossing some borders in some dubious times and needing help with visas in different places. And it's for the first time I've really had to reach out to a lot of these friends. Whereas before it was just, you know, we see each other and it's a great connection, but I had to really rely on friends, in these times. And it's beautiful to see that there are these solid connections and there are these people that are always there and everywhere as well. I think wherever I go, if I want to hang out with someone, there'll be someone nearby. Or if not, I can put something on Instagram and there'll be a fan nearby who can come and have a beer or something. And yeah, it's a really beautiful aspect of traveling is meeting and connecting and maintaining these friendships and being able to hang out every 6 months or so. Now it's maybe every 2 years, but yeah, it's so beautiful.
Well, that was my favorite thing when I was doing I still try, the last 2 years it's been tough, but I still try to travel once a month. But that's been absolutely one of my favorite things, is there's this weird thing where you'll meet people without even really, really trying. And there's been so many random but amazing things happen to me. It's one of the things that I love most about traveling and finding people. Somehow they just, it's like even when you're not looking, like an opportunity comes up and you're talking to a stranger at breakfast, and then these people stay in your life and they're like, hey, when are you going to come visit us in Germany? And it's like, oh, you still remember me. It's, we're email pen pals. But I think it's truly beautiful. And I wanted to ask if there's, I know I read about places like a cottage in Scotland, this isolated cottage in New Zealand, an apartment in Spain, an army bunker in Australia. Are there any of these places that remain and kind of are core memories for you as you kind of go from place to place that you think back on often?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think my favorite one is the cottage in New Zealand, and I'm still emailing the lady who owns it. She must be late 70s, maybe now. And we email back and forth once in a while. She's such a lovely, lovely old lady. And we emailed 2 weeks ago, just keeping in touch. And I asked her how everything was, the cottage and all the things she's got happening in her little village there. And it's a place that I will try to go back to for the rest of my life when I'm in New Zealand. Yeah, it's places like this in Scotland as well. There's a little cottage in on a little island that it's such a part of me. And it always will be. Yeah. In fact, the latest release, we just got some vinyl back the other day for the Marigold Razzie sessions, and it was recorded in this little cottage in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
And the cover photo is this cottage, and it's the photos in the artwork are all from this island. And yeah, without a doubt, these places will be with me forever. They are such a big part of who I am. And I think I do gravitate towards these remote, isolated places that are a little hard to get to, that you're just in such peace and quiet and nature, and there's no road noise, there's no distractions, it's just as you are. Yeah, I really love those places.
No, that's incredible. And it's also cool to hear that they're captured, like places like that are captured in film in your covers for the music that you create. That it's also like, I didn't know that. And so it's fun. Now I'll look at that thing. And I know I'm going to order the vinyl. I saw I saw your post, and I'm like, I got to get that vinyl. And so it's really exciting. I wanted to ask you as well about, we haven't talked about much about music, and I'm sorry, we've talked about all the things that music's opened up to, but I've really, it's kind of selfish of me. It is road trip playlist, so it kind of fits. But
for me as well, like my life, my priority in life is not music. My priority in life is people and connecting and traveling and seeing the world and living life. Music is my ticket to do this, which I feel very, very lucky for. So yeah, I much would rather talk about travel and places and photography and everything. Music is the side thing for me. Yeah.
Well, good. Me too. I wanted to talk one of the questions. It's not too much. Then I'll alter what I was going to say. But one of the questions that I wanted to talk about was about people. And I think I mentioned a little bit about your friendship with Passenger, but reading about it even closer, I like had to dig deeper. I'm like, what is this? I've seen all the like touring promotions ever since I've been a fan of yours. Fun quick story I'll tell you as an aside. I did a 2-year service mission for my church, and where I, for 2 years, you can't listen to any music that's not approved and not church.
Wow.
And so I told you how I had no education in music before. Like that's part of why, because you can only listen to like hymns. And so, but I luckily was in California. A lot of my friends went to like countries where you don't have access to things. And I had it to where you could accidentally hear music where you're in a public restaurant. So sometimes we would go out to eat for dinner to a place, and we know that there was always good music playing. And so we were at a Denny's diner. No, it was an IHOP. And, Let Her Go comes on the radio. And I didn't know, I had no idea, heard it for the first time. And it was like, what is going on? This song is so good. Like it was, I can still go back to where it was. It was stuck in my head. I had 6 months left of my mission where I had to live by those rules. It was stuck in my head every day for that time. And I caught, there was like one friend that knew I loved this song because he was with me when I heard it. And he was also in a public place once and he recorded it on, he called, he said, he texted me, don't answer your phone. And he called and he left a voicemail and he's in the bathroom holding it up to the loudspeaker to let me listen to, so I could have Let Her Go. So I had a 15 second snippet that I could technically, it's technically against the rules. So I'm telling you, I was breaking rules. But it's been 6 years, so I don't care. So I would listen to it and I only knew this 15 second snippet of the song, but I would sing it every day until I got home. So it's funny because I've been such a big fan of his. I've been such a big fan of yours. But I wanted to ask, because you met him when he was supporting, just a supporting act. And then you eventually go on these huge tours playing huge crowds. What was kind of that journey in friendship? And of course he, produced Vagabond and is a huge part of how Vagabond, how you followed through with it, because there were some things going on in your own life. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, kind of those experiences. I put like three questions in one, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it was incredible to meet Passenger or Mike. Mike was supporting a band called Boy and Bear in Australia. And I'd had quit my job and I was doing what music I could. And I had lots of free time, essentially. And Boy and Bear were touring. They had no money. So I just drove their tour van and sold their CDs. And on one of the tours in 2009, 10 now, I can't remember. Passenger was the support act, And he blew the crowd away every night. He outsold Boy and Bear with merch every single night. I was selling the merch and doing the numbers. And he outsold them every single night. And you could just see there was this determination and passion and talent. It was just undeniable. Like he had this ability and these songs, but he had the absolute determination to grab everything that he could and just go for it. Wow. And at the end of one of those tours, he asked me to drive his van and sell his CDs and take photos and things. And I said no at first because I was just helping my friends out with the Boy and Bear tour and I didn't want to, it wasn't my job. I want to play music. I don't want to just like drive and take photos and sell CDs. And he said, he came back with another offer and said, can you do all of that and also be the support act? And I was like, this sounds like a very good idea. So that was an incredible opportunity. And it changed my life, without a doubt. It changed my career. It gave me a career. Mike gave me a crowd. Like, he introduced me to crowds in the UK and Europe and North America and South America as well. He gave me a career. It's incredible. So, we recorded Vagabond twice, actually. He's the one that said we should record it again.
Okay.
And there's some news coming soon about the first version. In the next months, we'll make a little announcement. So he's the one that said, "Nah, come on, you need to record this again. It's not. It can be much better, and we can do a better job of this." So he produced then the second version, the version that we released. And again, it wouldn't have happened without him. And my father died during that process of recording, and we knew he was dying. He had cancer, but he died during the recording. So Mike just held this all together, and it just wouldn't have happened without him. Yeah, I have so much to thank him for in so many ways. Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's those things that I think are very special, because there's something about your music that is, I've loved reading other people's thoughts on it as I prepared for our conversation, and people saying things like freeing. It's cool because this gave you a lot of freedom. It gave you a lot of close relationships, but you also sing about things that are close and personal to you. And I was intrigued about you talking about yourself as a kid, as someone shy. I don't know if you still feel shy, but what's it like kind of opening yourself up? Because I think there is a special thing about your music because it is so open. You go to Marigold and there's things that are just heartbreaking about it. What's it like sharing those kind of details through your music? When you talked about music, like it helps as a ticket to travel, but you're also sharing some pretty deep personal things as part of this ticket.
It's true. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. I don't know any other way, I guess. I'm so happy to just write what I feel. And like I said, with photography, it's what I feel. It's nothing technical about my photography or my music. It's just what I feel. And that feeling comes out because it's real and it's personal and it's my genuine feelings. And I just sing these songs, write these songs about what's happening in my life and in the world around me. Yeah. So I think maybe at first it was a difficult thing to do because you're exposing your true emotions and first starting out, that's a very scary thing. But now I don't even think about it. It's just normal for me now. There's no problem. I'm happy to just say what I think and sing what I feel. Yeah.
Well, and what were those first, what was it like sharing it for the first time? Cause I told you about me with writing. When I wrote about your piece, I was very content on writing it and not sharing it with any of my close friends, any readership from the website I wrote it for, that's fine. I was too scared to self-promote because I was like, there's probably grammar errors that I'm not aware that I'm making. And so I was very scared to share it. And yours helped me in that moment to be like, something I wrote was good enough. Either everyone's just crazy fans of Stu Larson or they liked what I wrote, or it could be a mix of both. And I was like, maybe this is worth sharing. And so what was that like with you when it was like you first started, what made it to where you first started showing people what you had written
I think what you said is exactly right. Until you are aware of a connection from the other side or aware of what that connection is or what that response is, then it's so scary to think about sharing anything because it could be met with negativity or a blank response or anything bad, you know? And so I definitely found it so difficult to sing. I think the first time I sang properly in public, like I grew up in the church as well and sang in the church a bit as a little boy soprano and that was scary in itself, but I was just singing the songs that the church songs, you know. But the first time I sang a song that I had written was on the last day of high school. My last day of school ever. And there was a thousand people in this auditorium, all the students and all the teachers, all the parents, 1,000 people. And I sang a song that I'd written. And I remember before going to get the guitar to sing, I was like wanting to throw up, and I felt physically ill, and I thought I can't do this. Like I don't know what they're gonna, I don't know how they'll respond, and it was so difficult before that. And as soon as I stepped on stage and strummed the first chord of the guitar, something changed. I had a contentedness for some reason, I don't know, and I just sang the song, and I got a standing ovation from all the students. And it was appreciated. So that really changed my life. Because at school, I was teased. I was picked on. I was not in the cool group. I wasn't in even near the cool group. Like I was such a nerdy little kid and bad acne and pushed to the side quite a lot at school. And to finish on the last day of school with this, this response, I was like, okay, all right. There's some respect now. It's something's changed. And So after that experience of feeling relaxed during the song and then the response after the song, I felt like, okay, maybe it's not as scary as what I thought before I had jumped on stage. Yeah.
Yeah. Even more brave to do it where your high school experience was what it was. It's, yeah. It's great. And then you're like, hey, I should have done this junior year.
I think it was really cool to do it on the last day as well. Like I've spoken to a few students, a few friends since then at a reunion or something, but I really think it was this. I will dramatize it obviously in my mind, but it does feel like this movie moment of this, the nerdy kid, he's not very cool. He gets teased all the time. On the last day of school, everyone's like, what? Who is this? We didn't know he could do this. What's going on? And then see you later. Bye-bye. You know,
it's like a movie.
It was incredible. Yeah. But I still get nervous, not as extreme, but I've learned that from that experience, I've learned that it doesn't matter how I feel before I go on stage, as long as I can go into the first song in a calm way and you see the crowd and you feel some response and you feel that energy together. Still, every single show I do, I start with whatever song I start with, and I watch and I observe and I have that same emotion. And then after that, it's fine. You can feel that response and go through the rest of the show. But always the first song is like, what's going to happen?
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I wanted to give you the chance to talk about what I said that I would talk about when I reached out. I've been wanting to interview you for some time and things have come up, but I'm so glad that we got to today. I ask the same question to start every interview. We're scratching it. This conversation's been so good. We got into it. It happened natural that I didn't ask my icebreaker question, and I appreciate that. But wow. I wanted to ask about Part-Time Lover. It's one that you've recently written. It's coming out. In a hotel room in Berlin. What else can you tell me about the song? That's all I can gather from Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look on network as well. But what can you tell me about the song and what can fans look forward to with it?
It's there's not much information about it, which is kind of cool this time. Normally creating a vibe of what it will be about. I haven't even played the song for Mike or my other close musical friends. No one's heard it. Only the people who were involved in the process. And it's a bit different this time. I'm really just hanging on to it until the 1st of April, and then we'll release it. So, but yeah, it's a song that. So when was it? Last June. I'm in Italy now, but at the time I got kicked out of Italy due to visa situations. I thought I was going to be able to stay, but they said, no, you have to leave now or we ban you for 5 years from all of Europe. So I left very quickly. But the night before that happened, I broke up with my girlfriend at the time. So there's a lot of changes happening in a very short period of time. I had to get out of a country and deal with a breakup at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
Remember being in this hotel room in Berlin. And it was summer. It was hot. This room was hot. And I was trying to get over the breakup and trying to work out what I was going to do next. And playing a lot of guitar. And this song just came out and just kind of fell out naturally. And then I recorded it in Italy with some new Italian friends who are incredible musicians and good friends. And we're going to film the video this weekend, actually. And that's why I'm waiting in Italy till we finish the video. And then I have to leave. So we'll release that, I think, on the 1st of April as well. I'm not sure. But,
okay.
We'll see. So yeah, it's maybe my most radio friendly song. Okay. I think it's pretty, I don't know if it's pop, but it's, I don't know. I struggle to describe my own music, so, but it's more upbeat and the band are incredible and it's a fun summery kind of song. So it'll hopefully people will like it. Yeah.
it's incredible. I'm glad to hear I listened. Marigold came out around the time where I was going through a breakup, and there were some songs that I really loved, some songs that had just I loved, but they hurt to listen to. And so I'm glad that this one's a more fun one while it was written, like kind of while battling a breakup and change of scenery.
Yeah, I think I got into a real good headspace of like Marigold is depressing. It's so depressing. And I was in that space, and it was the same girl that I wrote that whole album about. We broke up and then got back together months and months later. So the album is all about her, and I was so hurt after the first breakup. Obviously the album speaks for itself. And then after the second breakup in June last year, I wasn't hurt in the same way. It was, we just knew it couldn't work, and we knew we couldn't be together. And the song is about her. The first line is, I don't want to be your part-time lover. And it's all about wanting everything. I was in a place where I was ready for forever with someone. I was so ready for that. And so for me, the song is, it speaks for itself, but yeah, it's about, yeah, not compromising and not sacrificing, in those ways. I want something real and full. Absolutely. Not just part-time. Yeah.
That's powerful. Yeah. I love that. And I felt that before. So it's one that people will relate to. I have to ask, when you tell a story like that, I worry about past people listening to this podcast. And if I've had people be like, I think you were talking about me on an episode. And I was like, I'm surprised you listen. What's it like getting back together after you release an album, after breaking up with someone, and they hear it? They've heard, I assume that she heard it.
Yeah.
What's it like kind of getting feedback and hearing about that later?
It was a bit weird, I think. I mean, that's exactly what she said. She didn't really say too much about the album and whether she liked it or didn't like it, or it sounded good or didn't sound good, or anything at all, no feedback. And one day I just asked her, I said, okay, like, let's talk about this, because it's a whole album I've written and you know it's all about you. And what do you think about it? And she just said, it feels weird. It just feels weird. And that was not the response that I was hoping for, but it's the reality. Like, it's probably pretty weird to have songs, if not a whole album written about you. It's probably quite weird, especially quite depressing songs. Yeah. So it was quite strange. And she'll hear the new song, and she will know it's about her as well. And we're not in touch at the moment. I know
how
we'll see if there's any response to that as well.
Not to the same degree, but I know, like, there's some episodes where I'm like, do I edit this out or keep it in? But I appreciate you being very open and sharing that. It means a lot. And I've really loved our entire conversation. And like I said, this is like one of the biggest honors for me, because you just weren't aware of like how big of a role it's played with me, and being able to do this has been kind of this secret dream. And then it became kind of bigger. I was happy to just keep doing free little shows, going to Mercury Lounge to cover. I bought my own ticket. So then when it was, you can get free tickets. Wait, you can now I'm getting paid to talk and to just talk with my favorite artists without having the musical. I don't know anything about music, I'm not technically sound, but I know what I like, and I know who and I'm happy to share that with other people. So thank you for being here. I have 5 questions I ask at the end of every interview. I wondered if we could if we could go through that. They're quick, more fun ones. The first one is, if you could have only breakfast food, lunch food, or dinner food, like only meals from that meal group. So like only breakfast food for every meal, or only lunch and so forth. What meal group would you choose to have every meal?
Oh my God. I think probably the dinner time, because I could survive, like, I can still have coffee in the morning. Is that allowed?
And then, yeah, you can still have coffee.
Because I survive without breakfast most of the time. So that's fine. Coffee in the morning, and then I can survive just on dinner meals. It's fine. Easy.
See, I listened to an interview where you talked about how you don't eat breakfast, and neither do I, but there's something about breakfast food. When I get it, it's such a treat. Yeah. Then I always choose breakfast, and I joke that you can throw in. It's like there's breakfast. People eat cold pizza for breakfast. True. There's steak and True. Eggs. There's, you can really mix and match. You just can't have like salads. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I can part with that. I should eat more, but number two is if you have a go-to karaoke song.
I hate karaoke so much.
I knew you were going to say it. I knew that you weren't going to be a karaoke guy, so I changed how I phrased it.
Karaoke song. The last time, I've only done it once. I think I've only done it once. It was in Vietnam years ago, and I sang. It was a giant song at the time in Vietnam. Someone had just covered it, and it was so big in Vietnam. It was Eternal Flame by, I don't know who redid it, but the original might be The Bangles.
Okay.
I don't know, but whoever brought it out again, it was so big. So I'd probably, if I was at karaoke ever again in my life, I'd probably go back to my only song I've ever sung at karaoke, Eternal Flame. Lock it in.
I love it. Number three is a guilty pleasure that you have on tour, or it could be traveling, because you kind of live on a tour of the world, just aside from music.
A guilty pleasure. I don't know if it's guilty, but it's a pleasure.
That's fine. That's
perfect. I will often have a flask of whiskey wherever. Okay. Not during the day, but I'll take my own whiskey to a show, because often the lots of places who bring you a bottle of whiskey at a show, it's not the stuff I like. So I'll take a little flask of whiskey on tour. It's a kind of a must have for me. Yeah.
I like it. No, that's not guilty. That's a good pleasure. And it's the first time I've heard that. So I'm happy to get that. Number four is a group that's not currently together that you'd love to have one more EP from.
Oh, wow. I think that answer is so easy for me. It's a band called The Middle East from Australia. Yes. You know them?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, incredible. So
I listened to your music that time where I made that first road trip playlist to Canada that I told you. Mm-hmm. I was finding this theme, and I'm like, why are all of these bands that I'm falling in love with tied to Australia mm-hmm. in some way? And it was you, it was the Middle East, it was Boy and Bear, it was mm-hmm. Hollow Coves, it was all of these great Australian artists. And I'm like, what is this? So I also made a playlist on the side of just Australian musicians. Cool. And so, yeah, I know the Middle East, long answer, but yeah. So that's a fun one.
They were incredible. Actually, it's one of the guys from the Middle East who recorded my first version of Vagabond in his studio in North Queensland. Yeah. A guy called Mark Myers, who, yeah, he's been around for a while. So there's a good connection there, yeah. But they were amazing. I remember seeing them at a festival in 2008 or something in near Sydney, and I was just like, who are these people? This music, the energy they had, the connection they had was incredible. And I remember seeing them in Australia one time in a little town called Toowoomba near Bowenville, and I was me and my girlfriend at the time were the only two people in the crowd that weren't the support band. It was a very small venue. Wow. It held like 40 or 50 people, but we were the only two ticket holders. And at the last song, they got the support act, the two support bands on stage to sing the last song with them. And it was very awkward then, because there was like 10 or 12 people in the support band. And it was just me and my ex-girlfriend sitting in the crowd while everyone else is on stage for us.
Oh, yeah, that's Middle amazing. East.
I'd love to hear some more from them.
Oh, that's great to hear. And number five, the last one is interesting guest that you recommend I have on the Road Trip Playlist podcast.
I would say you have a lot of fun and they're very interesting guys. I don't know if you've heard Amistad.
I have not.
They are... I met them in Australia years and years ago. I heard someone on the street around the corner playing my song San Francisco, and I could hear it. I was like, okay, it's weird to be hearing that song, but I think it's live, which is even weirder. And I went around the corner, and there were these two guys busking in Melbourne on Bourke Street, and they were doing San Francisco, and it was a really cool version, and we've become friends over the last years, and And yeah, they're great musicians and they're doing it pretty much on their own. And they're very cool guys. They've become some of my best friends there. They're great. So Amistad, they're living in Amistad, Amistad.
Perfect.
Yeah, they're in living in or near Munich at the moment.
Okay,
they've got a. They're very interesting. You should definitely have them. Yeah, no. Check their music out and have a chat with them sometime.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. It's I know I'll like it. And so again, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Thank you for. I'm crossing someone off my dream interview list, and so it feels great. And I hope we get to do it again sometime.
I hope so too, and we'll see each other in person someday when I'm back over that way.
I really appreciate it, and it's been so great to talk to you. And again, I look forward same. To
thank seeing you so you in much. Person. It's really really cool, really just lovely, man. You're such a good storyteller and conversationalist, and it's so easy to talk with you. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Stu. And again, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Okay. Have a good one.
That's it. Ciao.
Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Road Trip Playlist podcast. We've hung out for about an hour now, and I really appreciate the time that you put in, and thank you so much for listening. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate, subscribe, follow the podcast, and I'd love to hear any feedback that you have. If you're a fan of Stu's, let me know kind of what you thought of the questions, see what you think. Listen to some of the other episodes with other great guests. If you like this one, then you'll definitely like some of the other guests that we've had on. Again, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Check out Stu Larson and his music. Follow him on all socials at Stu Larson. And watch out for his new single, Part-Time Lover. Thank you again. Stay tuned for another great episode coming soon. Thanks.